This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well. Tongue-tied? Not, of course not. Look, this Saturday, 2pm to 5pm, is the wake and celebration of Denise Hassett's life. Those of you who didn't know Denise and want to learn a little bit about her, I did a Radical Australia interview with her, I think, around September 2025. That gives you an idea of the scope of the work she did as an activist. But her friends and acquaintances will be meeting, and I'll be there, hopefully, unless something happens. But her friends and acquaintances will be meeting this Saturday. That's the 25th of July, this Saturday, 2pm. To 5pm at the Dava, D-A-V-A Hotel, at the conference room at the Dava Hotel, which is in 617, the Esplanade, Mount Martha. You can't miss it. So obviously many of her friends from the Mornington Peninsula and south of the Yarra will be there, and hopefully a few people from north of the Yarra will be able to turn up. So it's basically, you know, just to remember her, all the effort she made during her life to create a more equitable society. So rest in peace, Denise Hassett. So it's this Saturday, the 25th of July, 2pm to 5pm at the Dava, D-A-V-O Hotel, 617 The Esplanade, Mount Martha. And if you want further information, leave a message on 0439 395 489. And guess what? There are five Wednesdays in July. That means I get a free Wednesday. I can't stuff myself with food. But next Wednesday is the Frankston get-together at the La Porchetta's, starting at 6:30pm. You're all welcome to come along. And those of you who are interested in obtaining one of these Anarchist Media Institute T-shirts to celebrate the 50th anniversary of 3CR, I'll be bringing some along to Frankston. But if you would like one, and unfortunately, we've only got large, extra large, extra, extra large, and extra, extra, extra large left. Medium and small have disappeared. They've been sold. And as I said, every cent raised helps to eradicate my debt, or the Anarchist Media Institute's debt, at 3CR. We are affiliates, and obviously we do our bit to keep the station on air. Just to remind you, it costs about $150 a week to broadcast the Anarchist World this week, which is peanuts compared to what you'd have to pay in the commercial networks and the hoops you'd have to jump through to, do it on the ABC. Also, don't forget the vigils and the steps of the Victorian Parliament House. It'll be interesting to see what happens on Thursday, whether the teachers go out. If the teachers go out, I think we'll be swamped. But let's meet there at 12 o'clock and see what's going on. So 12 o'clock, steps of Parliament House, public housing, everybody's business, vigil. After that, lunch, obviously. Lunch down at the Paramount Food Court. Now, the sacred cows have wandered in. They're a little bit upset. They're talking cockroaches. That's right. They're talking about the cockroach junta party. Now, do you know what that is? I assume you don't know what it is. It's a new political movement in Mother India. And as they're from India, because they're sacred cows, they're a little bit worried about the cockroaches under their feet.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Brainwash minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Oh,
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting this program from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. I'd like to thank Henrietta for doing all the hard work to ensure that we're on air. Now, if you wonder what anarchy is all about, or anarchism, anarchos, the Greek, without rulers. So anarchist society is not about chaos, it's about creating a society without rulers. When you have rulers, you have chaos, as we see around the world today, whether they're self-appointed, whether they're hereditary, or whether they're elected. So what are the two things which give rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Destroy, kill, maim, without any ramifications, because they're doing it in the best interest of their sovereign nation states, inequalities in power and wealth. What have we seen during the neoliberal revolution? Increasing inequalities as far as power and wealth is concerned. And so anarchism is about trying to create a society where wealth is held in common, the Commonwealth of Australia, and where power is shared, possibly through direct democratic means. Maybe we'll never get anywhere, but it doesn't matter. What's important is that we maintain the struggle and ensure that we don't create the societies we saw around the world 100 years ago. The old is new again. Heard that term? The old is new again. Now, obviously, you've realised that hate is the new Australian currency. Forget about the dollar. Forget about gold. Investment in the AI stock market. But hate, that's the new Australian currency. What you do is you find some minority somewhere. You put your target on them and bingo, you've got a political movement. It's quite sad, really. Now, those of you who are aware of your history will be aware that the same process went on in Western Europe in the 1920s. That's almost, it is 100 years ago. What we saw is the rise of movements, whether it was fascist Italy or a Franco Spain or Hitler's Germany. We saw the rise of movements which were able to exploit divisions in society, which were able to exploit the powerlessness of what was called parliamentary democracy, and gain power. Some through democratic means, others by seizing power. And the tragedy was they were lauded. Mr. Robert Menzies, who was the Prime Minister in 1939, Pig Iron Bob, as he was known, said in July 1939, that history would remember Hitler as one of the great men of the century. A great man of the century. That was less than two months, before the outbreak of World War II and Australia hanging on to the coats of their British Empire. So, as we've discussed in the past, there was a huge movement here in the late 1920s and early 1930s where people, Australians, were turning on each other, and hate was the Australian currency. And anybody who looks at the rise of the New Guard and the Old Guard in the 1930s will understand how divided the nation was and how attractive dictators were, because they could solve the problems that parliamentary democracy couldn't solve. So 100 years later, hate has become the new Australian currency. It's nothing new. Nothing new. What you do if you find yourself in a situation where power is challenged, and we are seeing an increasing movement, not just in the hate mongers, but other people who are questioning what neoliberalism was all about, we are seeing the rise of diverse political, social and cultural movement. One movement is about targeting minorities and using that tactic to improve their electoral chances. The other is about creating a more egalitarian communion, whether you work through direct democratic means, whether you work through parliamentary action or extra-parliamentary action. So you've got these two currents. And these two currents are there for one very good reason, because of the failure of neoliberalism. Neoliberalism has been the superhighway which has created the current situation that allows neo-fascism to grow. And if you think that it couldn't happen here, just look at Australian history. Just look at what happens to social cohesion when inequalities in power and wealth are exacerbated. And they've been exacerbated, not just here in Australia, but around the world, by an ideology which was based on the concept of removing the state from the private sector, allowing the private sector to have its head, allowing the corporate world to dominate economic activity. Simple concepts. And that's what we've seen in this country. And when I talk about neoliberalism, I'm talking about, you know, four words, and I'm sure you're bored with it, but I'll go through it again. Globalisation, corporatisation, deregulation and privatisation. And what have they led to? They have led to a situation where an increasing number of people in this country have been marginalised, have been exploited, have been pushed aside. And what happens? You have political movements like Divided Nation and the Liberal Party and the National Party and even sections of the ALP, political movements, social movements, cultural movements, which are hanging their political futures on their ability to generate hate in the community against minorities. This is nothing new. Nothing new. The old is new again. And we see it over and over again when parliamentary democracy is not able to satisfy human, social, cultural needs. And why has that happened? Because power in this country and the rest of the world does not lie in parliament or a dictatorship. Power lies in the hands of a minuscule minority who are able to determine the parliamentary agenda. Look at the hullabaloo when the Albanese-led government, feeling itself under pressure from the hate mongers, passed a little bit of legislation to redistribute a minuscule amount of wealth to the Australian people. Unbelievable reaction. Unbelievable reaction. It's like when Rudd attempted to introduce a super profits tax. And then we saw the Gina Reinhardts of the world jump on the back of trucks complaining about what it was going to do to them. And the fascinating thing is about Divided Nation is that they have been financially backed by the Gina Reinhardts of the world. Not just Gina, but other billionaires in this country who are showering Divided Nation with financial contributions to assist their run in parliamentary elections. And why are they showering Divided Nation with contributions? Because they know that if the people unite, join the dots, and, you know, and realise that the situation we find ourselves in is due to the fact that a small number of people determine this country's parliamentary agenda, which determines the laws, which determines how wealth is distributed, which determines how we interact with each other, that their days would be numbered as far as their domination of the social, cultural and political features of our country. And that's it. When we saw Mussolini and Franco and Hitler rise to power, what we saw were initially considered to be crackpot ideas become part of the political ideology of those nations, because once those crackpot ideas were supported by people who had wealth, who were concerned that the growing socialist and communist movements and anarchist movements around the world would somehow strip them of their power, then what we saw is their rise. And that's the dilemma. People talk about a tipping point in this country. And that tipping point has arrived. Because it doesn't matter what Divided Nation says. The reality is that people are sick and tired of a parliamentary system which does not deliver relief. And that people are looking for a third force. And that third force should be us. That's right, you and me. Whether we're parliamentary activists or extra-parliamentary activists, it should be us. Instead of all these disputes about nothing in particular, about, you know, about identity politics and this and that, the fact is we are facing an existential crisis in terms of the type of society we will become. And I see the tipping point arriving. Unless we go out and fight this tooth and nail, as they did in the 1930s, the more progressive forces in this country, then we will find ourselves in an exceptionally difficult situation. Not just in terms of hate laws, but in terms of our very survival as political entities. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. I suggest you go to the YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests, and also josephtoscano.com. And also, there's a number of, obviously, but the important thing is we need to be able to join the dots. But more importantly than being able to join the dots, we need to be able to show other people that the problem isn't the other, the identifiable other. The problem is the fact that power and wealth has been concentrated in such a minuscule number of hands in this country. Social media, money-making machines. Did you know that? I love social media. You know why I love social media? Because the algorithms which are used to determine how the platforms interact with us, the great unwashed public, is all about making money. See, the owners of these virtual platforms have no responsibility. They think they are immune from the sovereign nation state, and in many ways they are immune from sovereign nation states. And its sole purpose is not to educate you, it's not to provide entertainment, it is not to, you know, show you cat videos. Its sole purpose is to make money. And the fascinating thing is not just about making money for the platforms, it's about making money for the influencers. If you're on social media and you reach a critical mass, dependent on what's defined as a critical mass by each of these platforms, then you make money. You can make a living by being an influencer on social media. And it's all relevant to the number of hits that you get. So you get people like the Tate brothers who promote, you know, evil. And you get people like the chap old Miss Hanson was chatting to in Great Britain. And they've got millions of followers. So the more outrageous your statements, the more eyeballs on your platform. The more eyeballs on your platform, the more advertising can be sold by those who own the virtual platforms, and the more money flows into the pockets of influencers. So no wonder social media has become little more than a moral, ethical quagmire. That's all it is, a moral, ethical quagmire, where influencers are rewarded financially for making their most outlandish claims. Outlandish claims. Where influencers can, through their ability to entertain, in inverted commas, people, what they are doing is changing, dramatically changing the networks we live in. Those older viewers who rely on radio right now or the legacy media need to understand the goalposts have changed. It's the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. It's a period where facts and fiction are indistinguishable. It's a period where belief is the primary motivating force for people. But unlike the Middle Ages, where belief was a primary motivating force, the issue today is many of these money-making machines on social media have no contact with reality. They're able to create an alternative reality. An alternative reality that people can lose themselves in. Believing the most outlandish lies. Because facts and fiction have no place in the 21st century. All you've got to do is listen to the Washington buffoon. All you've got to do is listen to Mr. Putin. Facts and fiction are irrelevant. It's just about a belief. So it's important that we maintain links, that we maintain social links, that we don't get drawn into this quagmire, been involved in numerous debates about nothing in particular with people, anonymous keyboard warriors, who are more interested in increasing their reach on social media and rewarding themselves financially and rewarding the masters of the virtual platforms. So it's nothing new. The old is new again. It is nothing new. It's about unbridled capitalism. That's what it's about. It's about the state moving out of the way of the private sector and allowing the private sector to do what it likes in order to maximise its profits at the expense of the community, irrespective of the human, social, environmental costs. So you can say, you know, the climate emergency, it's fake. The Bondi massacre, fake. What's happening in Israel, in Palestine, fake. And somehow, because it comes out of your mouth and you're on social media, somehow it's real. It's not. And what I've noticed over the last 20 years with the advent of social media, 25 years, is what I've noticed is that fewer and fewer people are now taking part in physical activity. I'm talking about political activity in terms of protests, in terms of being out on the streets. Although I have seen some new movements. For example, the teachers in Victoria have gone against their union and have decided to continue their battle against the Victorian government for just wages and a more equitable public education sector. and the birth of this new movement in India called the Cockroach Jaunter Party. You like that? The Cockroach Jaunter Party. CJP. And what's the Cockroach Jaunter Party? It's a party of young people. Let's not forget that less than a year ago, young people swept the old power brokers from power in Nepal and in Bangladesh. Less than a year ago. And what we are seeing now is people have been promised anything and are given nothing and now being marginalised. And in India, education continues to be the mechanism via which youth are able to escape poverty. But the problem that has occurred is that there are growing numbers of unemployed young people with degrees who will never be employed. And the education minister in India said they're all cockroaches. So what do the young people do? They took to the streets and they formed the Cockroach Jaunter Party in opposition to the Hindu nationalism, which has been the primary political force in India over the last 20 years. And Hindu nationalism is really another form of social control, a little bit like, you know, Islamic states. So, all part of the Cockroach Jaunter Party in India. But the fact is that although social media, the virtual platform and the influencers create this artificial system, this virtual world, the fact is you can use social media to organise, and you can organise rapidly. And that's what we saw in Bangladesh, and that's what we saw in Nepal, and that's what we begin to see in India. And that's why authoritarian regimes, whether it's communist China, North Korea, Putin's Russia, are very keen to limit the ability of social media to organise resistance against them, as we currently see in the Ukraine. Unbelievable. Oh, it is believable. So there are good and bad. As an organising tool, it can be quite powerful, because overnight you can create a movement, and that's what we need in this country. Not a movement, you know, led by old people like me or you, but a movement where young people say enough is enough and don't get sucked in to the old debates about the other and the hate as the new Australian currency. And as the social elevator has been dislocated, destroyed in this country, because of the nature of education, especially tertiary education, it's becoming more obvious that a larger group of younger people now not only ostracised and marginalised, but will never, never be able to achieve what their parents were able to achieve by just holding down a job. You're listening to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. If you're listening to this program in Melbourne and you knew Denise Hassett, an activist who died recently, she was very well known on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria. Her friends have organised a celebration of her life, wake, whatever you'd like to call it, this Saturday, the 25th of July. That's this Saturday, the 25th of July, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Dava, DAVA Hotel, at the conference room. And the Dava Hotel is on, I think, 617 on the Esplanade, Mount Martha, Mount Martha. Let's move on. It's your fault, isn't it? Have you noticed something interesting in Australia. It seems that everything has a medical tag. And somehow, the increasing anxiety that a huge number of people are feeling, not just because of economic pressures, but because of their inability to actually influence policies which have a direct impact on them. And there's all this terminology and all these medical and paramedical professionals that are now treating the problem as if we are individuals divorced from the society we live in. We're not just people who interact with our family and friends. We are, to a significant degree, products of the society we live in. And ultimately, when it comes to psychological and psychiatric issues, there's two major groups. There's reactive and there's endogenous. Endogenous, in the majority of cases, you're born with the problem. And obviously you can have major issues. And people do have major issues, not through no fault of their own, but maybe because of their makeup. And then there's a reactive depression or reactive anxiety to the situation you find yourself in. And if you find yourself in a difficult situation, it's not unusual for your body to react, for your, flight, mechanisms to come into play, for adrenaline to be poured into your body in an attempt to deal with the situation. And the problem today, and again, this is my opinion, the problem today is not a problem which is related to individual deficiencies or interpersonal relationships, although interpersonal relationships do play a factor. It's about the fact that we live in a society where the ability to have any control over your day-to-day life is lost. And the less control you have, the more anxious you become. And it's no accident that so many people in this country are on anti-anxiety medications or involved in psychological treatment if they can afford it, or are on medications for depression and anxiety. Not all of it is endogenous. The great majority is reactive. People are reacting to the dog-eat-dog world we live in. Well, ultimately, it's about making a buck. If you can't make a buck, then you've got a problem. So, if you are involved in counselling, if you do feel anxious, look at the bigger picture. Obviously, if you've gone to a tertiary education, you've got a degree or two, you come out and you've got this huge hex debt and you can't get a job, obviously you're going to be anxious. If you're involved in a job where you're on a contract, individual contract, obviously you're going to be anxious. If you're responsible for other human beings and that responsibility means you're keeping your job, obviously if you're under threat, you're going to be anxious. So it's quite ironical, isn't it? In a period in human history where we have had so much material possessions, where we can consume almost anything we like as long as we've got the money to buy it, that there is so much anxiety and tension and irritability and depressive illnesses, not just among adults, but children in Australia in 2026. So it's not your fault. It's not just, you know, it's a combination, isn't it? It's a combination. The type of society you live in determines your behaviour. I'll give you a little example, a little experiment, all right? Now, I hope you like mice. Now, if you get, say, two couples in an environment and they go about their business and procreate, as mice tend to do and human beings tend to do, the more mice in a confined space, the greater anxiety and asocial, antisocial behaviour within that network. I mean, this is basic biology 101. So ultimately, the more pressure human beings are placed on because of the type of society they live in, the greater chance there'll be an increased incidences of psychological damage, anxiety, depression. The list goes on and on. Let's move on. Just one last thought there. You can do something about it. If you understand there is a bigger picture than you and your feelings and your relationships, that you are part of a community which is disintegrated, then you're in a better position to deal with the issues, the problems you're faced with. Let's move on. Public bad, private good. Public bad, private good. How long have we heard this little mantra? Public bad, private good. Why is public bad and why is private good? Good. Well, let's go back to basics. Now, we have 28 million Australians, and I know I mention this every week, but politics is about repetition. Living on a resource-rich continent, we are 0.3% of the world's population. You like that? 0.3%, not even 1%. I mean, at least I get more than 0.3% when I stand for election. Usually about 1%, but you've got to laugh at yourself. So 0.3%, okay, of the world's population. We live on a resource-rich continent. We don't live on a floodplain like in Bangladesh, which has absorbed over a million refugees from Burma. So why is public bad and private good? Why do we have thousands of Victorian school teachers out on the streets tomorrow because they're unhappy with the situation they find themselves in, not just in terms of wages but in terms of the way the public schools have been treated in this country? Why is it that private is good? Well, it's simple. Private enterprises receive government money, and that's your taxes at work. Instead of these taxes being put in public schools, public hospitals, public institutions, and the public is the many, what we see is billions of dollars of taxpayer money, your money, and you all pay taxes, even if you're not working, even if you're on a pension. Everybody pays a goods and services tax. And when you see that money, those resources, being given out as a cash handout to the private sector, billions of dollars, you begin to understand why we find ourselves in this situation. And then on top of that, we have given away, as a people, previous governments and the current government continues to give away this country's resources to private corporations. I mean, Madam Reinhardt is a billionaire, not because of her exertions as a human being, but because she inherited all these leases from her late father. Mr. Twiggy from West Australia. I mean, you look at these people and basically they've made good because of the amount of money, public money, which rolls into their organisation. And with the privatisation of almost every aspect of our existence over the last 50 years, what we see now is that private sector is addicted to taxpayer money. So private schools continue to receive billions of dollars of government money at the expense of the public schools. Public hospitals do not get the funding they require because, one, taxation revenue is dependent on, mainly dependent over 65 to 70% on the pay as you earn taxpayer, not the corporate sector, not the mining sector, not the resources sector. So no wonder when people deal with the public sector, whether it's public housing, public health, we're told there's never enough money. Now, if 0.3% of the world's population living on a resource-rich continent cannot even provide basic necessities for 1 in 6 Australian children, obviously there's something structurally wrong. Ethically and morally, people do what they can. We've got over 32,000 registered charities in this country trying to plug the hole in the dikes. And obviously, unlike the little boy who put his finger in the dike and saved Holland, there aren't enough fingers in this dike because of the hemorrhaging, that's right, hemorrhaging of taxpayers' fund to the private sector. Whether it's the aged care sector, whether it's early childhood development sector, whether it's private hospitals, whether it's private education, whether it's corporate welfare. Remember robo-debt? When the federal government, the Morrison-led federal government, was involved in this illegal activity which nobody's been charged for, where they screwed people on Social Security benefits or limited income because they could maybe find $1 billion or $2 billion. But more importantly, it was to make sure that people, you know, stayed in their place. Remember those good old days? Well, today, the amount of resources, amount of taxpayers' money which is being diverted to the private sector is just extraordinary. For example, when the Commonwealth Employment Service was privatised, we now have $8 billion going to the pockets of private organisations which somehow are there to get people jobs. But they're there basically to ensure the institutions which have those contracts continue to make a profit. As I keep saying, it's a little bit like having three people in a marital bed when you give the private sector public money to do what the public sector should be doing in this country. And as far as divided nation is concerned, well, it's all the public sector, isn't it? It's all their fault. Obviously, it's not. Let's move on. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The budgie smuggler is back. Remember those wonderful pictures of our former Prime Minister, Mr. Abbott? I call him Budgie Smuggler Boy. I should call him Budgie Smuggler Old Man these days. He's back. He is now the leader, not the parliamentary leader, but the leader of the Liberal Party. And if you look, well, if you can stomach it, I only stomached about 2 minutes, of his latest epistle to the masses, you think he's reading from a divided nation Bible. There's really no difference between Abbott, Mr. Abbott, and Miss Hanson. No different whatsoever in terms of the policies they're spruiking, in terms of the way they treat First Nations people, in terms of the way they describe minorities. And the fact is the Liberal Party, which is trying to re-badge itself as different to divided nation, is just extraordinary. He's back. He's back. He's the head of the Liberal Party. And they elected him. They never learn. Well, maybe this will be the end of the Liberal Party and we'll just see. It'll be us and divided nation. Let's move on. So I'm pleased the budgie smuggler is back, because that basically has dug the grave a little bit deeper for the Liberal National Party. Barnaby Joyce. Good old Barnaby. I love Barnaby. I loved him when he was on the street inebriated. I love him when he's now a member of Divided Nation. Now, unfortunately, the people of his electorate elected him. Somewhere in New South Wales. Elected him as a National Party member, but then he's kind of flown the coop and has joined Divided Nation. Now, I think Barnaby has a little bit of ethical and moral backbone. And it's interesting watching him trying to put out the spot fires that have been created by Miss Hanson's trip to good old England and Sicily for a holiday. Extraordinary. Now, Barnaby had this idea. He thought that he would become leader of the divided nation when Miss Hanson hung up her frock or her hat. Well, unfortunately for Barnaby, he hasn't read the constitution of divided nation. And the constitution is very simple. It says that Miss Hanson is president for life, and more importantly, that it's not the central executive, whatever they call themselves, that appoints the new successor. It's Miss Hanson. And obviously Miss Hanson is very, very keen, like Kim Il-jung in North Korea, to keep it in the family. And it looks like she's anointed her daughter Lee, who had made an unsuccessful tilt at the Senate in Tasmania at the last federal election. So Barnaby, grow up, see them for what they are, and rejoin the National Party. You may lose your seat, but who cares? Let's move on. What do you do when your policies don't pass the pub test? You like that? The pub test. Now, they are getting good advice. I must say, Divided Nation is getting good advice. Now, Miss Hanson's trip to the old Dart, the United Kingdom, was a little bit of a disaster. Well, she might not think it was a disaster, but it had its electoral negatives. And obviously the people that are championing the Divided Nation group, the billionaires that are putting their money into Divided Nation because they don't want their resources to be touched, they've told her, look, you've got to tone it down. You've got to tone it down. You can't use hate as a mechanism via which to gain power. So what's the latest strategy? And the latest strategy is that they're going to listen. They're going to travel round the country, going to pubs and houses, and they're going to listen to what people tell them. They're going to listen to what are the issues. Well, you know the issues. I know the issues. What they'll do is they'll listen to the people they want to listen to and won't listen to the people they don't want to listen to. At the end of the day, they won't have any policies for the next federal election, because the best way, as we saw for Mr. Abbott, to win an election is not to have any policies. Because if you don't have any policies, well, then people can't criticise you. Let's move on. Now, there are positive aspects in society, and you see them all the time. Now, I was quite blown away with how rapidly the autocratic governments in both Nepal and Bangladesh were swept away by young people in those countries, people who felt they had no future. And obviously social media played a part in terms of their organisational capacity, more importantly, their capacity to get people out on the streets to actually confront those governments head on. Now, I'm not sure what's happening in both those countries today, but at least it's better than what it was. Now, I've just learnt about a new political movement in India called the Cockroach Junta Party. You like that? Cockroach Junta Party. Now, nobody likes cockroaches, do they? Well, maybe another cockroach likes a cockroach, but I assume so. So the Cockroach Junta Party. Now, what's all this about? It's a little bit like gays adopting the pink triangle as a badge of courage, because the pink triangle was what people had to wear in Germany during the Hitler regime before they were killed because they were gay. You've got to remember, it wasn't just Jews who were killed, slaughtered in their hundreds of thousands. That you had communists, socialists, anarchists, disabled people, gays, gypsies. All were no longer deemed to be suitable members of the Aryan race. So the Cockroach Junta Party. Now, currently there's been a little bit of problem in India. You have a educated middle class. They see education as a mechanism via which to climb their way out of the situation they find themselves in. And many, once they become educated, you know, go to all corners of the world, including this country, and provide valuable services. But the problem is that it looks like the whole system via which people are chosen to take certain exams and become members of particular universities that have been totally corrupted. And what we've seen over the last few years is the fact that the answers to the questions have been given to certain sections of the community. Now, there's been a little bit of unrest amongst young people, because the growing inability of young people with qualifications to get jobs in India. And the education minister, a man who doesn't like to take a backward step, called them cockroaches. He said all those unemployed young people are cockroaches. Cockroaches. So what do the unemployed young people do? They formed the Cockroach Junta Party and began to protest in the streets. So keep an eye on India. For far too long, Hindu nationalists who have used religion as their calling card, as we saw when the Prime Minister visited Melbourne a few weeks ago, or last week or the week before, who've been using religion and divisive tactics to maintain power in India, are now being confronted by a growing number of young people who see no future for themselves in a country where the education system has become so corrupted that people in the know are getting the answers to questions in examinations which people have studied for years in order to try to break out of the poverty trap they find themselves in, to get into some type of tertiary institution to get some type of qualification to drag them out of that situation. So the Cockroach Junta Party, love it, love it. Maybe young people in Australia should form such a party. As I said before, ultimately, social media is a mechanism by which you can organise. Forget about the information silos, the lies, the fake news, the virtual worlds. I mean, it's great at creating that, because that's a money-making machine for the virtual platform and the influencers who are happy to use whatever words and actions they can in order to become influencers. Let's move on. Now, a lot of people were a little bit depressed after the referendum regarding A Voice to Parliament. I was one of them. I mean, I said at that particular point in time, if that referendum fails, and it failed for a variety of reasons, we will see no governments in this country attempt to reconcile with this nation's first people on the basis of justice, not charity. And over the last 24 hours, we've seen the passage of legislation through the Northern Territory government, and it is a territory. It is under the control, like the ACT, of the federal government, pass legislation which has wiped away 30 years of ideas regarding the best way that Indigenous children who are removed from their families can be looked after. And the main thing was to attempt to keep them within the Indigenous cultural situation. The current legislation means that we are at the potential of seeing the beginning of another stolen generation. Let's not forget that the majority, that a significant number of First Nations people do live in the Northern Territory. Significant number. I think it's about 35% of the Northern Territory is made up of Indigenous people. Now, intervention is something that a federal government can do as far as Northern Territory legislation is concerned. We saw intervention, I think it was by Howard, regarding the Dying with Dignity legislation, which was first passed in the Northern Territory, whether it was squashed. Now, people are calling for intervention from the federal government. There is no way that a federal government is going to intervene because they understand that the hate mongers that we have in our society that have got everybody who's different, you know, as targets would make a field day of the government if they intervene. So let's see what happens. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. Just remember, the budgie smuggler is back. He's the leader of the federal Liberal Party. Poor Liberals. I may have to give them a donation to help them at the next election, the way they're going. And don't forget, there is room for cockroaches in your life. Now remember, you can leave messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. You can go to the YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. You can join Public Interest Before Corporate Interest by going to PIBCI, info@PIBCI, or go to PIBCI, PIBCI.net, PIBCI.net. You can actually write to us at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Web pages, anarchistmedia.org, another web page, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. If you're interested in radical Australian history, josephtoscana.com, NARM. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.